Right now, we're joined on the phone by Tom Jensen, who's the director of public policy polling based out of Raleigh. Publicpolicypolling.com is the website, at PPP Polls if you're on Twitter, and get more information that way. And as we get closer and closer to the 2020 election, it's starting to get close to a presidential debate season, particularly on the Democratic side, obviously, as there are still a couple dozen candidates jockeying for position, not just at the top of the polls, but also in that all-important top 20 to qualify for the Democratic presidential debates, and that's what we're talking about today. Tom, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Aaron, good to be with you.
So a number of candidates are very much at the top of the polls, and we've talked about this before, kind of five people now in particular: Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, and Kamala Harris are kind of separating themselves from the pack up top. But the really interesting thing about the Democratic presidential debate is that with so many candidates, they're limiting it to 20, right, that are going to be on the dais. Mm-hmm. So that difference between being 20th and 21st starts to make a huge difference in terms of how much exposure you get in your campaign, and that difference is really, really slight from one poll to the next. So talk about how they made this decision. I know we were kind of talking about this earlier today, that the decision between who's number 20 and who's number 21 came down to some really interesting quirks of the polls that we're seeing in the last couple of months.
Yeah, so first of all, a lot of pollsters, and I would include myself in this, don't like polls being used to determine who gets allowed in the debates and mm-hmm. who doesn't. Because a lot of the time, the differences between the candidates in the polls are so small and so statistically insignificant that it really just doesn't quite seem right to have something so important be determined by such small differences in polls. So specifically for this first set of debates, to qualify, people needed to get at least 1% in three different polls from a list of sort of pre-approved polls that were going to be included for consideration. And really, the difference between getting 1% or 0% or 2% in a poll is really insignificant. You're talking about just a few supporters making the difference between whether you get in or not. And where this is particularly having an impact that's kind of interesting is that Colorado Senator Michael Bennett is getting in the debates, and Montana Governor Steve Bullock is not getting in the debates. And here is sort of what caused them to sink and swim in each of their individual cases. Michael Bennett got his third qualifying poll from a CNN poll where he got 1%. Last week. And CNN sort of dug in their numbers, and they found that among the people who said they supported Michael Bennett in the poll, which I think was four people, half of them said they had never heard of Michael Bennett, but they also said they supported him, and that got him in the debate.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
All right.
Steve Bullock, on the other hand, had three polls already with 1%. And then the DNC decided last week that one of the polls where Bullock had gotten 1%, they decided didn't actually count as one of the qualifying polls. They had initially said it did count as one of the qualifying polls, and then they changed their minds and said it didn't count as one of the qualifying polls. This was an ABC Washington Post poll, which is one of the best pollsters there is. And the reason that they decided that the poll didn't count anymore was because it was open-ended. I actually think that it's much more impressive to have gotten 1% in a poll that's open-ended than it is to get 1% in a poll where all 23 of the names are listed off. Because Michael Bennett, for instance, who got in on a poll where half of his supporters had never heard of him, he wouldn't have gotten those people saying they supported him in an open-ended poll, because mm-hmm. clearly they were just sort of sick of answering the poll and said, okay, Michael Bennett moved on. Steve Bullock actually had enough people who, off the top of their head, said they supported him to get to 1% in this poll, and they took it away from him. So that took him down to two polls where he met the 1% criteria when he needed to get three. And then the very last poll that came out sort of in the window of time where they were considering the polls for letting people into the debates Steve Bullock missed getting to 1% by one respondent. So he doesn't get to be in the debates because he came one respondent short in another poll after they disqualified a poll where he had qualified. I mean, this is just not a good system for figuring out who gets to state their case to the public and who doesn't.
And those are some kind of pretty fun details with those specific surveys, but just kind of from a larger scientific perspective, as a pollster, what's the difference between 1% and 2% in a poll?
I mean, it's one or two respondents. It's really, especially when you think about rounding and that sort of thing, like if you have a poll with 500 people, if you get seven respondents, you're going to be at 1%. If you get eight respondents, you're going to be at 2% with rounding, difference of one person. So I think that really this whole system just magnifies statistically insignificant polling differences in a way that really is determining whether people sort of get into the process or not. Although I will say about Steve Bullock, and you know, Steve Bullock clearly is not one of the top candidates, but he's the only person running who has been elected statewide in a Trump state, I believe. He got reelected by 6 points at the same time that Trump was winning the state by 20 points. Now, that doesn't mean that he's going to run 26 points ahead of Trump and the whole country, but certainly somebody like that, I think, you know, deserves to at least have their voice heard, deserves to at least have their story heard. But the one silver lining for him in getting left out of the debate is that he may get more attention for complaining about getting left out of the debate than he would have actually gotten by being the 18th or 19th or 20th qualifier for the debate. So that may be at least be the small silver lining for him.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, Public Policy Polling, and that was kind of my follow-up question. Obviously, this makes a big difference for Michael Bennett, and it makes a big difference for Steve Bullock. Does the decision between Bennett versus Bullock or somebody else, is that going to, or how much of a chance is there that it would have a large impact on the debate, the discussion, or who rises and falls in that primary race?
Well, at the end of the day, the chances are not very small, or not very great, that anybody is going to have a very game-changing moment in these debates, partially just because of the format. You know, the way that they have this set up is the debates are going to be over two nights in a row. It's going to be 10 people in the debate each night. It's going to be randomly selected which 10 go each night. So it's not going to be a situation like you had with the Republican primary in 2016, where all the top-tier contenders were in one debate, and then you had what was sort of known as the kids' table debate between the lower-tier contenders, where they got to talk to each other, but they weren't on the same stage with Trump and Rubio and Bush and those kinds of people. So I think that this format is going to make it even harder for people to sort of stick out in the debate, because for an average Democratic primary voter to sort of fall in love with a candidate means that they have to watch two nights in a row, you know, to make sure they see everybody. And then, of course, there's going to be so many people on stage to begin with that it's sort of hard to break out in a 10-person debate. And I think, you know, sort of taking off the pollster hat and just putting on the normal voter hat, I think it's too bad that Democrats have set this up in a way where, for instance, Biden and Bernie might not be in the same debate. Bernie and Elizabeth Warren might not be in the same debate. I know it was sort of too bad for the people who were in the kids' table debate in 2016 for the Republicans to be stuck in a kids' table debate. But as you've noted, and as we've talked about before, the Democratic race, at least at this point, has really seen five people clearly rise to the top. And I absolutely think more people are going to clearly rise to the top over the next 6 or 7 months. But for now, it would be really nice to see those five people who have already clearly risen to the top all get to debate each other instead of being spread out across two nights where, you know, there may just not be the kind of serious engagement between the people who voters are the most interested in that you might like to see.
speaking with Tom Jensen. And as we wrap up, I wanted to actually get jump off of that point, because we talked about this, I think, last week, about the five people who have kind of risen to the top in the polls right now. And again, Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Pete Buttigieg has made a move. Elizabeth Warren has always been there, but she's made a move as well. Kamala Harris is there. And it's kind of been those five ranked one through five in pretty much every poll that we've seen. And I asked you last week, is it basically now a five-person race? And you said, no, it's too soon. And there are plenty of examples in fairly recent history of candidates who at this point in the cycle were polling extremely low, like virtually non-existent, and then eventually rose up and either got the nomination or at least got really close. John McCain in 2000, Bernie Sanders in 2016. You mentioned Donald Trump was only beginning to poll first in the 2016 cycle around this time. Last in 2015. So follow-up question to that, do you have to be a particular kind of candidate in order to be kind of non-existent in the polls right now, but then catch fire and move up in the polls later on? Do you have to offer something that the leading candidates don't? And if so, of the 20-some Democratic candidates who really don't have a lot of support right now, are there candidates that stand out to you as people who have a better chance of being that insurgent candidate later on?
Yeah, there's a couple of people. So I think you have to have something unique that you bring to the table to sort of be the person who catch fires late. And that can either be a stylistic thing that you bring to the table that causes you to sort of take off with people, or it can be some sort of issue focus that causes you to take off with people. So there's sort of two people in the Democratic field in particular who I see as having the potential to possibly sort of catch fire later, especially. And that's Beto O'Rourke, and that's because simply we know that he has an ability to really connect with and excite Democratic voters that he showed in the Texas Senate race last year, just brought out a Democratic turnout for a midterm that was completely unprecedented. His campaign for president clearly has gotten off to a mediocre start. He, you know, sort of diddled around about whether he was going to run or not, and so far he hasn't really seemed to have a lot to say. But there's definitely something in there that caused him to be a superstar, rock star sort of candidate in Texas last year that I think certainly has the potential to reemerge by the time voting starts next year, that gives him some potential. The other candidate among the sort of second tier Democrats right now who I think possibly has the power to catch fire is Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington.
That was my guess as to who you were going to say.
He has really sort of positioned himself as the climate change candidate, and I think that distinguishes him from all the – look, I like Jay Inslee. I've actually spoken to Jay Inslee on the phone before when he was a client, and he, like, personally called me up to talk about his poll back when he was still in Congress. He's a nice guy, but he's a boring white guy, and there's a lot of boring white guys in the race. But he is distinguishing himself from all these other boring white guys by having a really strong issue focus that I think that voters could find compelling once they get to know him, because right now they don't know him at all. And he also, in general, Washington state has been at the forefront of all sorts of progressive legislation during the time that Inslee's been in office. So I think he has a good story to tell once he finally gets the form to tell that story. So those two in particular, I think, have the potential to break out. The other two who are doing pretty poorly right now, but who I still could see catching a second wind at some point, are the a couple of the other female Democratic U.S. senators running, Kirsten Gillibrand from New York, Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota. Neither one of them's gotten a whole lot of momentum so far, but they both have good stories to tell and have been very appealing candidates within their home states. And I think once people get to know them better, they have the potential to sort of get broader support than they're seeing at the moment.
Get more info online at publicpolicypolling.com. Find PPP on Twitter at PPP Polls. Tom Jensen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.